Welcome to 3GT, a podcast where a pastor, parishioner, and professor have lively conversations on practical Christian living from a Reformed perspective. For more information, visit our website at 3GT.fm.
Welcome to another episode of 3GT. That's three guys theologizing. And we're still at two guys, but we do have guests today that actually pushes us up to four. So this is Barry York. I'm here with my co-host, Kyle Borg. And we're very happy today to have with us Vince and Samuel Ward. Vince and Samuel are a father and son who have recently written together a book called Pursuit of Glory, A Disciple's Journey with Jesus. And it tells the very fascinating story of the work that they have done on the mission field in South Sudan. So Vince and Samuel, we welcome you to 3GT today.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks.
We're going to dig in a moment to your story, but before we do that, could you just briefly tell us what you're currently doing? Because you're not on the mission field currently in Sudan. So could you just explain a little bit what you're doing at this time?
Sure. We live in Ottawa, Canada, and we've been back from the field for the last 3 years. And presently, I'm working with Every Village as programs director. Mm-hmm. And also preaching a lot here in Canada as a pastor, but more of a mobile pastor preaching in as there's need. So Samuel can share a little bit about his life here.
Uh-huh. I'm just wrapping up grade 9, heading to summer. I'm doing quite a bit of work to get help save up money for future schooling opportunities, and pretty much my life at this point.
Good. Well, we're again glad to have you here. And I did recently read your book, and I was telling you earlier that I was over in Ireland and passing out copies, and people were gladly snatching that up because they've heard of your work, but maybe not all of our listeners have. And so could you men briefly summarize what the Lord led you to do? You were on the mission field in South Sudan, but could you give a little bit of the story of that, the time frame, so that our listeners who may not be familiar with your work would understand?
Sure. Well, I can start with the call of God to Christ, where that was really a calling throughout my youth, but really was a time where God impressed on me the fullness of salvation by grace when I was in university, actually at a camp in the summertime in 1996. And that's when the call to Christ came, and a deep understanding of what grace is in Christ. And so that began a journey of really reassessing my priorities and realigning my life toward Christ. And that was when, having finished university in physical therapy school in 98, just seeing no longer a desire to make money and to land a good job with, the American or Canadian dream. And it became more of a prayer. Lord, what do you want to do with me? I'm yours. What's your calling on my life? So it was really through various strings of providences that I started to meet South Sudanese here in Ottawa. And then I met some in Kenya, that in 2000, God made it very clear that he was calling me to Sudan. At that time, it was still called Sudan, to be a church planter there. And so that was in 2000. And from 2000, in those years leading up to 2006, it was a preparation phase where I was going through studies at Ottawa Theological Hall as a student under care in the presbytery, St. Lawrence Presbytery, and then marriage in the midst of that in 2002, having Samuel in 2003, and then some internships, but then in 2006, being actually sent out as missionaries with the RPCNA and with Samuel, little one, on board, and also Heather Heising as our initial first team.
Mm-hmm. And the way that you summarize your story, so just to describe the book to folks who haven't seen it yet, it has about 34 chapters in all. And Vince, you write pretty much the first two-thirds of the book, and you give your full accounting of what took place. And then in the last third of the book, Samuel writes. And they really complement each other well, because as Vince goes through all the details and the story, there are times where you're wishing for more, maybe more details, because the chapters are pretty short, like 3 or 4 pages. And it's fun to read this from a boy's perspective as well. It fleshes out some more of the details, like the snake hunts or sleeping under the stars, those types of things that were taking place there. So it's a really fascinating read. I guess one of the things I would ask you, just currently on the mission field, you went there, you began this work, and where is that work currently? What's its size roughly, and what's going on at this point in time?
Yeah, sure. Since we left in 2015, the team has continued to serve there. So we have the Ferrises, Daniel and Natalie, and their 3 boys. Scott Brinkerhoff and Jan Buchanan are there with the team still, mostly focused on the school, Kush Krishna School. Then Joseph and Jaguna, Kenyan missionary, who is a missionary with Every Village, but very much part of Kush for Christ. He's also mm-hmm. part of the team since 2014. And we've had several short-term missionaries come through to support the work there. So what was established over our period of time there from 2006 to 2015 was initially, firstly, the focus of planting a Reformed and Presbyterian church. It's called South Sudan Community Church. And at this point, there are 4 organized churches. I'd have to look at the more recent stats, but there are probably 20-plus mission churches and at least probably 10 fellowships, so the beginnings of mission churches. And then after establishing that church, a presbytery was formed that continues to meet quarterly. We have then training of pastors and those who are church planters. So that's continuing. That's a training process we call cross-training. So certificate, diploma, and now we're getting into degree-level training. And then we establish ministries that help to support the church. So that involves a Christian FM radio station and a school, Kush Christian School, which is more local for the kids that can walk and walk in distance. And then health education for the women, literacy, evangelism in the secondary schools and discipleship, and various other smaller little ministries that have gone on over the years. But again, it's all to strengthen this church and certainly bless the other churches in a more kingdom mindset in that whole area.
Mm-hmm. And if I can interject something really quick, or just a question, Vince, to follow up on that. Maybe you said this and I just missed it, so I apologize. But when you got the call to go there in 2000, had any of this been established, or is all of this the result of the last 18 years of working and laboring for Christ in that area?
Yeah, so our first trip to South Sudan was 2002. Julie and I were newlyweds. It was sort of part of our honeymoon, I guess. And we got into Sudan, and it was still a war zone. And really those years, 2002, 2003, 2005, we took short trips. And we were trying to establish relationships, because it was really a work that was starting from scratch. And 2006 was when we really made that place our home. We built huts and we started learning intensively the language and the culture. And so there was nothing there before. It was just a field in terms physically. It was just a field. And now we have our homes. But in terms of relationships, we all had to begin that from scratch.
That's incredible. So
yes,
thank you.
Yeah, it was very much laying new foundations. And yeah, certainly reading that, you taking your wife on a honeymoon to a war-torn area is sure made me feel like a wimp.
I don't know how when wise I was to do that, actually.
One of the things that you really stress in your book that I appreciate, it's just also part of Vince's spirit as I've known you over the years, is the whole idea of discipleship and that meaning that we're to be lifelong learners. And that's really comes out quite a bit in your book. And I wanted to ask both of you guys, like, what would you say are some of the key lessons the Lord has taught you as you've gone through this experience and have had this time really in writing the book to reflect back on what God did through and in and through your lives?
Mm-hmm. Sure, I'd love to hear what Samuel say to that. But for me, it's, as you said, it's lifelong learning. It's humbling. It's doing things sometimes over and over and not learning very quickly. But I think over time, well, I know this in hindsight, looking back, I see that sanctification process and renewing of the mind, seeing how my thoughts become more in line with God's thoughts and perspectives on his kingdom and his church. And mm-hmm. So those are just generalities, but just overall, just a stripping away of dying to self and self-reliance, recognizing that it's Christ who builds his church. It's not me. It's not my methods. Prayer is primary, because within a few months, really, I just came to the end of myself. I said, you know what? Nothing's going to happen here without God showing up and doing his work in and through us. And so we started our midweek prayer meeting as a team, and that became really the center of our week, and then certainly Lord's Day worship, and just seeing the means of grace, the ordinary rhythms of gathering, prayer, worship, and the word being central in our lives as a team, as individuals. You know, we're all works in progress, but God has been pleased to use our feeble efforts. Mm-hmm. So those, again, humility, humbling circumstances, just bring us low and dependent on the Lord. But Samuel, go ahead if you want to share.
Let's
hear from Samuel.
I think a big lesson I learned had to do with the will of God, because I was especially resistant to moving back to Canada 3 years ago, and that was pretty hard for me. But then just coming to accept that God's will is best, that he's sovereign, and that whatever does happen, in the end, it's working out for the best. And it has worked out very well, despite how hard the transition was. So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, that's an amazing perspective, because most people would be thinking about resisting God's will to go to Africa. And you're certainly thinking of it in the opposite direction, of coming back to your parents' homeland, but not necessarily what you grew up and were familiar with. So I appreciate you sharing that. What are some, as you think back and your time there, and you bring out some of these stories in the book, particularly you, Sam, I want you to start first with this question, but what are just some of the experiences you remember with fondness, or a story you like to tell the guys when you get them around as you tell them what life was like living there?
So it's a lot of stories, everyday experiences, really. I think that's what made Africa feel a lot more like home, just living without so many amenities, and you're kind of more connected, I don't know, with the environment and with the people around you, and life is not like so easy that it becomes fake. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed just spending time with my friends. Like, two games we loved to play was soccer. We had a huge field the outside of our village where we played big soccer games, and it was just like a strip of sand, but that was really awesome. We also mm-hmm. like jumping around the trees and playing tag in a tree, and that was really cool. I like going fishing. The swimming was the best part, diving into like really opaque muddy water and looking for catfish, and yeah, just hanging out with friends. That those are my fondest memories. Whenever I spend time with local friends and grow to appreciate them and their lives there and connection I had with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, both of you write, but perhaps Jamie with more description about your encounters with snakes. According to the reading, it wasn't either you two that were the best snake killers in your family. Is that right? Or
yes, Julie gets all the credit out of anyone on our team. If Julie's around and there's a snake, everyone sort of moves, steps aside, and she comes in and deals with it within seconds.
You know, if I was on the mission field, my wife, that might be the same. I'd be running in the opposite direction. But yeah, of course, some of them are very poisonous, so you had to be careful.
Yeah, my role was to hold the flashlight if it was dark and to tell Julie to be careful or to hand her the shovel.
Yeah, that's incredible. Vince, I was going to ask you one question. As I was reading your account, and you do tell quite a bit of your story, not a lot of the chapters, but you do give some detail and talk about being vulnerable about what you were like before you became a Christian. And one of the things I just wanted to ask you, you see in the scriptures, when you look at the life of a leader like Moses or a church planter like Paul, that even before they became believers and God used them greatly for his kingdom, that there was particular ways in which God either made them with their personalities or training that he gave them that ultimately led to preparation for what he ended up calling them to do. And I thought it'd be interesting for you just to reflect on that question. I think you would say you see that in your life, don't you? Like, for instance, you're a very driven guy, right?
Yes. Beforehand,
and still, I think you are. But remind our listeners or help our listeners understand a little bit about that part of your life.
Mm-hmm. Sure. When I was a little tyke, I just dreamed of being famous. And when swimming, I was really light and skinny, and I just, in the pool, I just felt very, it was a natural environment for me. And so I just was really fast when I was young. And so I started dreaming of being an Olympic athlete. And so that was my drive throughout my teenage years. And that's where I found my identity, really. And what came out of that was two things. One is that God didn't give me the idol that I was pursuing. And he brought me to the end of myself. Not fully. There were still some things he had to show me after that. But I really see those years as developing and building mental toughness and perseverance. I'm trying to teach that my own children as well. You know, when you experience pain and disappointment, you persevere through that. And so it's all in common grace. For me, it was a time where God had his hand on me. He was allowing me to pursue these vain idols, but he had a purpose in it, of course. And I didn't even know where Africa was on the map or South Sudan. I found out where South Sudan or Sudan was in 1999. You know, I was so clueless as to what was going on in the world. I was so focused on myself and my dreams. But obviously God's writing the story, and he brought me through that season of my life for a purpose, and put Sudan on my heart. And I think I could see that, you know, in the harshness. I'm not really an outdoorsy person, or I hate snakes, and I don't like foreign foods. I just liked hamburgers when I grew up. There was nothing in me that would bring me to a place like Sudan, except God was preparing me in different ways for that place, that particular place.
Right. I like how you said it in the book that God allowed me to pursue the idol, speaking of the glory of the swimming pool, until I came to the end of myself and realized it was all vanity, a grasping after the wind. And then you had a particular time where you just really realized you weren't going to make it in that field to the level that you wanted. And you said, I was a failure, and yet I hadn't come to the end of myself. Instead, I began to look for other things to fill the God-shaped hole in my life. And there's another period, right, where you're also striving, except this was a different goal. What was that one?
Are you talking about my raving days?
Yeah. I just thought that was very, it was like the last thing I expected to read about in this book.
Yeah.
And I still can't get the picture in my mind.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, I try to include...
Samuel, can you picture your dad raving or?
No. Well, it's funny. I was trying to get a picture of me with blonde hair, although they're all black and white pictures in the book, but the quality, digital quality of it wasn't good enough to be able to be included in the book, but I've got some funny pictures of me in those days. So it was just a few years. So finishing my swimming career when I was 19, I had a lot of energy and I was bouncing off the walls. I just, you know, I could dance all night at these rave parties without taking any supplements, anything to help me with that. And so that drive was different in the sense that I wasn't trying to achieve personal glory. I was trying to achieve nirvana. That's one of the titles of the book. It was as though I was trying to jump into this unknown, and I was on the edge of a cliff, but the line of the cliff just kept on moving, and it just showed how God was still there with me, but he was showing me that this is not going to fulfill this desire for ecstasy and nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another stage.
Yeah, and it was another, as you came to the end of that, another emptying of yourself and realizing life's not either the pursuit of your own glory or the pursuit of pleasure.
Mm-hmm, pleasure,
and
yeah.
God gave you really the true pursuit, which was to follow him as a disciple.
That's right.
So I appreciate that. Well, what led you guys to put pen to paper? I know it's not an easy work to write. So what led you guys to write down your story? Were you encouraged by someone else, or was it something you two talked about together, or did Dad start and Samuel finish? How did that come about?
Yeah. Well, we came back from the mission field and things were still fresh in my mind. I really wanted, it ended up being initially as a personal exercise to chronicle, to document all the things that God taught me. And I wanted to honor the Lord as with this document in that he was faithful. I wanted to be open as to how I wasn't faithful and how I know he's completed me. And I started pretty much when I came back, but Sam actually started when he was still in South Sudan, and he'll explain a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't honestly remember like exactly when I started writing, but it was in Africa. I ended up scrapping the first copy because I thought it was trash. It was pretty bad. And I guess it's just because I enjoyed writing and I still really enjoy writing, and I didn't have much to write about, and I knew I'd be moving home to Canada soon, and I thought it'd just be cool to put together a collection of stories that I'd experienced. And shortly after I came back to Canada 3 years ago, I started writing it independently of my dad's work. I wanted to self-publish it on my own, a small little booklet thing, and I finished it 2.5 years ago, I think, and it's just kind of been sitting around for a bit.
And so then and Sammy, you're only 14, so you started writing this...
When I was 11.
11, wow. And so how did you end up being convinced not to self-publish, but to link up with your dad?
Mm-hmm. He was, like, blackmailing me into it.
So... I went to the Crown and Covenant office one day when we were in Pittsburgh, and I said, you know, the things that you were wanting to get from my book, because actually, let me step back one step where Julie was the one who encouraged me to offer this to Crown and Covenant, because I was just going to self-publish too. I didn't think it was good enough as a book to be published by any publisher. So I actually... went there. Julie encouraged me to do that, and then they asked me, "Well, you really need to have more descriptives in your book. Just tell us more. People want to know about the snakes and the sights and sounds and the scenes that you can describe." So I said, well, my son's done that. And what if we were to be able to put our two books together? And that's the way he writes. And he's very good with words. And so I thought it would really complement the two books well together. So we get a two-in-one book, mm-hmm. two-for-one, and but very different writing styles. And I think it, whether people want the snake stories, you can get them from Samuel if they want to know more about, you know, the chronology of how this work developed, and they'll get it from me.
Yeah, well, it does work well together that way. And Sam, you are a good writer. So do you have any other plans to write? Or
mm-hmm. I finished a modern fiction novella back in May. Right mm-hmm. now I'm kind of stalled figuring out what to do, but mm-hmm. I have plans as like writing my whole life as a side thing and getting as many books as I can published. But wow. this is my first piece of published content.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah. That's good. Well, it's a fascinating read, and it's not just snakes. I mean, you all had to deal with thieves and idolatry mm-hmm. and demonic powers and spiritual turncoats, and then also in the midst of civil war, a new country being formed. So just to read the book is to really be reading a piece of living history. And one of the theme verses of your ministry is your ministry, which was called Cush for Christ, is that Cush will stretch out our hands to God. Mm-hmm. And you want to just explain for our listeners, fence that connection with Cush and mm-hmm. and the South Sudan, and why you chose that as your theme verse?
Sure. Well, again, it was in the Lord's providence that I was brought to meet with Sudanese initially. And so then I started studying what the scriptures say. Do they say anything about Sudan? And it was remarkable how many references there are to Cush. Cush being the ancient people of Sudan living mostly in northern Sudan at that time, and then became the kingdom of Nubia. And then the descendants of the Nubians are the Nilotics. So the tall black people of South Sudan all came from Nubia, several of these major tribes in South Sudan. And that particular verse in Psalm 68, verse 31, I believe, basically teaches that there will be a people, certainly in the time of Isaiah, that will come and they'll bring their offerings to Mount Zion. Isaiah chapter 18 speaks of them as mm-hmm. bringing their offerings. And that's the vision or the picture that they have as a people of what God is going to do in drawing them to that place of worship. And we always cast that before them as God's vision for them. And certainly they see themselves as being ones who do stretch out their hands. You'll see a lot of, in worship services, people are stretching out their hands in that same way that you find in our logo with the hands stretched out to the side like that. And so it's a beautiful picture of what God has done in the past with them. And certainly in the last a couple of decades, there's been a huge ingathering of these tribes to Christ.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fascinating. I still remember a number of years ago at our National Synod meeting when Dave Long, my friend, had been there, and he shared the videos of some of the things that were going on and seeing the people both burning idols and celebrating their freedom in Christ. It was just one of the great highlights mm-hmm. of our reports at Synod, which are not always the easiest mm-hmm. thing to sit through, but that one was certainly a joy. Mm-hmm. Well, we're very grateful, Vincent. Go ahead.
Real quick, Barry, if yep. I can. I have not had the chance, Vince and Samuel, to read this in its fullness, and I hope to be able to do that sooner than later. What I do appreciate, and Barry has touched upon this, is the way in which you guys have dealt honestly with the grit of the mission mm-hmm. field. You know, as somebody who's grown up in America and somebody who has grown up in American affluence. It's easy in some ways to romanticize the idea of missions and what, but the daily grind of it all, I appreciate seeing a picture of that, you know, and I know, Vince, when you were over there, there were many missiological questions that are extremely difficult. And so it's really opened my eyes to not the romantic side of missions, but the reality of it and the supreme difficulty of it. And I think it's just useful to remind our listeners, you know, be praying for missionaries. Yeah. The missionary life is not romantic. It is gritty and grimy, and there's all kinds of difficulties. So that's what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that because it's a true reflection of the book. Well, Vince and Samuel, thank you again for joining us today. And we also want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to 3GT. If you'd like to get a copy of Vincent Samuel Ward's book, The Pursuit of Glory, we're going to have a couple of volumes of that available if you send an email to threeguystheologizing@gmail.com, which is not only trying to enter this contest, but it's also a spelling contest, I guess, if you can put all that down, threeguystheologizing@gmail.com. We will send a free copy of that book to a few of our listeners. And if you don't get it that way, we'll have information available on our website for how you can order your own copy. It's well worth the investment. Thank you again for joining us at 3GT. Come over to our website at 3gt.fm and see this as well as other episodes we've recorded. In our next episode, we are going to reveal our new parishioner, so you'll want to be sure to tune into that episode in particular. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.